We're in it together, trusting the process, showing up for it all. And here's where we let it land. Welcome to another episode of Let It Land. I'm your host, Kat Inakai. How do we teach our kids safely through a global pandemic? Well, this is a question that now, in September, as schools open, is on everyone's minds. All over the world, governing bodies, school boards, teachers, and families are all trying to find that elusive answer even while we deal with our one constant, uncertainty. At the end of June, as we wrapped up the last school year, I had an opportunity to chat about the lockdown, adapting students and families to virtual learning environments, mental health, high-risk communities, and universal education with our guest today, who is an educator with the Toronto District School Board and my daughter's teacher. But before we get into that, I'm going to take a minute and tell you about something I will be using every single day through this school year, no matter what it ends up looking like. Between my neuro and Crohn symptoms causing incontinence, lovely, super painful flares of fibromyalgia, mixed connective tissue disease, arthritis, and more, I basically live in Knix wear. These bras and underwear, loungewear, there's so much to choose from, guys, are super soft, seamless, supportive, leak-proof, and wire-free, which is so important during my pain flares. And I feel awesome in them, whether I'm doing physio or dressed up or trying to teach my kids during a virtual day of school. I even wore them at my wedding. But right now, I'm going to be giving $10 off your purchase. And all you have to do is click on the special link in the notes and then use the code KnixPartner10 at checkout. Isn't that awesome? And now I'm so excited to introduce to you TDSB educator Christopher Snow. Today I am talking to Christopher Snow, who is an educator through the TDSB and special to our family because he is my daughter Veronica's teacher.
Yay! Welcome,
Christopher.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to be Veronica's teacher, too, as you know.
I love it. Tell me a little bit about, I know we're going to dive in. We were chatting a little bit before this, and we dove immediately into, like, the meatiest topics, obviously, with the COVID and the kind of pandemic learning that we've been doing. But I do want to just ask you a little bit about, you know, what made you want to become a teacher and a little bit about your background?
Sure. So when I was a teenager, I would say at that point in my life, if you asked me, I would have said kids. I don't really like kids, even though I was one. I didn't have any kind of notion that I would become a teacher. But in one of those little random life moments, I needed a job. And a friend of mine was working in a daycare, and it was the 80s. So, you know, your qualification for a job was you were available. And I was. It fit with my schedule. So I took a job at this daycare after school. And I was 16 years old, and I was, you know, washing a few dishes, working with some of the school age kids throughout the day. And I was hooked right then. I thought, oh, I really like this. You know, I liked the kids. It brought out totally different sides of my personality. Like, I remember this kid, Jason, the first week when he was leaving on the Friday, he came up and gave me the biggest hug. And I kind of stood there shocked, like, what kind of a connection is this? I'd never had that in my life. So that's how it all started. And then I just started, you know, pivoting towards that. Everything educationally lined up. I went to finished high school, kept working at that job, went to university, kept working at that job, and eventually worked at that job right through the faculty, and then became a teacher in 1996 or seven. I think it was six.
Wow, that is so beautiful because, you know, I always like to say, like, we do what we are.
Very true. Very true.
But it's so neat to see, like, when those things spark, like, and what that ignites within us, because you never really know. You can make up your own mind about, oh, I kind of want to follow this path, and then life has other plans for you.
Yeah, I've always noticed that in my case, that I'm not you know, I've worked in jobs that are, you know, I've been a consultant or I've done, you know, things that someone else might go, oh, that's kind of high profile. But that was never, ever, ever in my head. It was more just, oh, this looks like fun and this could be interesting and this opportunity looks interesting. And I think when you're in that kind of mindset and there's not a lot of pressure, I've had some great opportunities through education that were not strategic at all, like, or schmoozy. It just kind of happened, you know? And I think because I love it and I'm not afraid to kind of pass up something if it's not the right time. So when the good stuff comes along, yeah, it's cool to be in a headspace where things just kind of come to you, you know?
You know, what's really interesting is I'm just did a coaching call today. So this is fresh in my head and I love how it's together, but that is really sort of the beginning of a growth mindset. When you limit yourself or kind of, you don't like define what it is, stay open. And what's really, really beautiful about that, of course, is that it removes obstacles. It's why not? And one of the things actually that I, as soon as you said it, I thought, wow, that explains so much because I see that in your teaching. I don't know if you know that. Vivi, when she talks about, well, certain things are just super easy because Mr. Snow just makes them fun. It's just, why not? It's recontextualizing it into a learning opportunity instead of a fixed curriculum, you know?
Absolutely.
And she just absorbs it. So it was really interesting to me, you know, obviously as a parent with the start of this, of the shutting down in March, you know, after March break, and then just knowing, getting that general sense of, oh, okay, COVID is a big thing. It's going to be sticking around with us.
Yeah.
You know, one of my primary concerns was the shutting down because like in so many classrooms, right, the teacher is such a pivotal point of that. Like, you guys are keys to knowledge, right? You know? So in terms of like your moment of realizing, oh, I'm going to have to do things completely differently now.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, it has been a huge and unprecedented shift in my perspective about, or it's called upon things in me that, you know, are not my access points for being a teacher. So I think in that way, we're all in it together, right? Because it's called on that. The kids have been called upon for that. The families have been called. Everyone in society is kind of in that position right now. But, you know, if I talk a little bit about my philosophy as a teacher, I think you're bang on about, you know, growth mindset is that idea that, you know, we haven't figured it out yet, or we don't need to have it figured out in order to do it, or, you know, let's explore this idea, or let's try this out, or let's figure this out together. And when we have that perspective, you know, kids are kind of ready for that anyway, right? Kids are just by nature out of the box thinkers. So they're going to throw a bunch of amazing ideas at us. And then the traditional curriculum has been boxy and kind of full of boundaries and limits and doesn't really allow for that kind of exploration. So, you know, the curriculum is shifting slowly and the perspective towards education is shifting slowly. But I would say personally, I always felt confined by that curriculum anyway. I always felt like, oh, okay, that's a boring way to come about this particular skill, or kids don't want to do that. They want to do this. So I was already pushing those limits. And a lot of that pushing those limits and bringing kids into the learning process in a fun way is through relationship. And so for me as an educator, I would say, that is the very foundation of everything I do. So for me, it's about relationships, you know, first and foremost with the kids. So the kids get to be who they are holistically. And then I get to be who I am holistically with them. And I think those relationships, traditionally in education, we kind of have this, the kids, they have their feelings and their relationships. And then the teacher is like a salt statue and is not supposed to have those things. And I think my superpower as a teacher is I can't contain that anyway. So it just comes out and I have to be who I am. And I share that with kids because I think it helps them to see who they are, and then I learn from them, and it creates a really nice foundation for learning. And then that, you know, that way of being particularly is impactful. It's impactful for everybody, but I think particularly for those kids who really need to be pulled in, who maybe struggle in some way a lot, they need that relationship sometimes more, you know. And so I think it's helped me to reach kids who maybe haven't seen themselves as learners or haven't felt solid in school. That's been where a lot of my energy's gone. So all of that is to say, those are all the things that I'm accustomed to doing personally, right? The personal touch, like reading feelings, intuiting how things are going, getting feedback in a million different ways all day long. And so then here we are, March 13th, kind of the sky falls. Okay, we're not going back to school. We kind of have a March break of, you know, every day there's some other thing that's shutting or we don't have access to. You know, I moved my mother into assisted living just before that, and all of a sudden I can't visit her. She's on her own, you know, so dealing with things personally like everybody was. And then this dawning realization, like, oh, we're going to go online and have access to students that way, and interact that way. And I don't know how to bring any of my most potent skills into that environment. It's all sort of been dependent on being face to face, you know, and kids are going to need that more right now than maybe they've ever needed it before, because the kids are stressed, they're anxious, they don't have words, you know, they don't know why they can't do their work, right? They sit down to work and they think it's about the math or they think it's about the science, but it's not. It's about the whole world is shifting under their feet. And, you know, as a fraction of their lives, it's, you remember being a kid, how long summer seemed, right? So not so much anymore, but yeah, I saw all of that at the beginning. So, you know, it required a lot in terms of rethinking how we're going to do these things. How are we going to have a relationship that reaches all the kids when we can't actually be around each other? Yeah.
It's interesting too, because I know that at the beginning as well, not only did you need to focus on shipping everything online, but I know that school boards were kind of going back and forth on how to implement things and what was okay and what was maybe encouraging too much contact even with communities and things like that. And it was like, really, I mean, from our end, we were kind of like how do we keep up with all these changes?
Absolutely.
At what point do we tell our kids, hey, you can trust this, you know?
Right.
But we were, you know, I know it must have been shocking for you as well.
Yeah. It was a shock. It was all of those things you just said, absolutely. Like, as a professional, I think within the first few days I figured out, you know, there's like the email you get and then there's what it means. So the email, everybody was feeling like our union, our professional body, our board, the ministry, everybody was feeling a high impetus to communicate. So we were inundated with a lot of communication. And I can sum it all up in like a phrase, which was, we don't really know. So try to figure it out, you know? So there wasn't a lot of helpful information at first. And it was a really good opportunity for me to keep taking a deep breath and going, like, they don't know either, and they don't have to know, right? Just because they're the ministry doesn't mean they know more about, you know, this than I do. So where I avoided going, which I'm glad, is into that kind of combative, bitter, you know, you should have told me how to do this, because I don't think they knew how to do it. Well, I know they don't. I sure didn't. So there's the growth mindset, I guess, again, right? It was sort of like, okay, we're going to have to figure this out. So in the beginning, the first thing within the first couple of weeks, I realized it's going to be about, you know, giving kids, families, really like options for how the work can go, but not making it completely top down, because I think that's going to add a lot of pressure. And then trying to encourage as much face-to-face contact as possible. So through the daily Google Meets where kids can come. And in the beginning, we just told jokes and chatted and, you know, tried to build a culture, a bit of a culture of, you know, how are we going to do this online? So it was really just that beginning stage, you know, forget the book learning stuff for a little while, and let's just focus on how's everybody doing, and helping the kids. I did a lot of, you know, talking about how I was feeling, just to show them, you know, oh, I've been really stressed. I can't concentrate right now. It's hard. I have to work differently, you know, because I think kids need to, you know, they feel their feelings, but I think they also need to have somebody say, yeah, that's good, right? Like, that's how you feel, and that's how it is. So that was the beginning.
You know, it's really interesting, because I know, and it's so interesting knowing how my daughter, you know, kind of was going through it, and, you know, following your leads, which was amazing. Like, I love having this conversation. I know that she really felt a lot of anxiety. The kids, and I don't think parents or teachers or anyone really realized how much the kids were absorbing.
Right.
I mean, if adults, I know I had to start microdosing the news, because I was, my adrenaline was just, and my blood pressure and everything, I mean, I was just out of whack, and in this perpetual state of panic. And I realized, even if I was saying, oh, it's gonna be fine, you know, that was probably the least believable.
Yeah, it's like, if only.
right. So it, you know, it was great, because I know Veronica did talk to you about, I mean, did say to me that you talked about your feelings, and it is that giving them this permission to kind of explore their feelings, distill things, and like also connect the feelings to the words, which I find that especially at this age, my daughter's 10, going on 19 sometimes, but 10, you know, that age is such a, it can be a time of nebulous growth, and it can be very hard. And I find, from my experience, just like overwhelming for them to make those connections between like what I'm feeling is A, totally natural, and B, it has a word, and C, it has a context, you know? So I really appreciated you leading those conversations. I feel like we were very lucky, because my son Harrison's teacher, Harrison's 5, his teacher did the same thing. Led these kind of community, like, mental health conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very empowering, and it was absolutely the foundation of the trust for the next, I don't know how many weeks we've been.
I'm so glad to hear this, right? Because this is the kind of feedback that is really lacking. You know, how is this going? And then when you're, you know, receiving messages as a teacher, we received messages from one of our bodies that was basically saying, sorry, professional bodies, not our own bodies, but saying to us, you know, if kids start talking about their feelings of anxiety and stress and pressure, direct them back to their parents. Don't, you know, that's not really appropriate. And I thought, okay, that is setting a kid up for a life-altering moment, right? Where, yeah, sorry, I'm on the clock. I'm not that person in your life. But, you know, kids, when they are telling you things like that, are telling you you're that person in their life, right? That's how kids tell you. They just start talking about it. They don't have some sort of, you know, boundary setting conversation in advance where they go, I just want to, maybe your daughter might, right? She might. But, you know, typically a kid would not kind of check in. They just start sharing, and they're being vulnerable. And, you know, I'm really clear about that has to supersede everything for a kid in their development to feel heard in that moment. Yeah, I think that was our primary job in the beginning.
Sick Kids Hospital, which is an international landmark, okay, released their guidelines for Ontario to reopen their schools. And it's caused a huge amount of controversy. I read it, and as somebody who is in a vulnerable, high-risk household, somebody who, you know, really was looking for answers, for guidelines from the government and also from a medical institution that could give me insights about, like, what the next year is going to look like, I was seriously let down.
Right.
But that aside, I was really, really amazed that the Sick Kids said, you know, mental health is the most important thing, almost more important than physical health. And, you know, that basically kind of made it sound like anybody who was going to keep their kids at home, to be completely honest, like, it made it sound like if you're going to keep your kid at home and perpetuate the closure of schools, then you're, you know, it's a disaster. And yet it's interesting to hear that and to be on board with. I'm not going to lie, some of it, because yes, I do feel like, you know, there is such a benefit to traditional learning. There's such a benefit to consistency and support in a personalized space. However, I think it's really interesting that hearing what you were just saying about, like, certain bodies, professional bodies saying, hey, you know, like, no to mental health conversations, no to this. And then hearing...
From you know, kids, it's all about that, yeah. There's the whole spectrum.
There really is, and I'm feeling, I guess what I'm feeling by bringing up the Sick Kids documentation too, is that right now, even though I feel like individually, the educators that I've had experiences with, and I've heard so many in my community, moms and also members in high-risk households, you know, have nothing but praise for teachers, absolutely nothing but praise for the educators. How do we now go forward with the work that you've already done that seems to make sense? It now makes sense to the kids. And we all of a sudden have all of these questions again back in the air. All of this dust is in the air with, well, our school's going to reopen and what is it going to look like? And this person's guidelines versus that person's statistics.
Yeah.
It's all kind of starting up again, isn't it? That kind of stress and the unknowns and the uncertainty. What's your take on this?
You know, I'll say first to go back a little bit, like, I'm really interested in your point of view about that. I think this is why we all need to keep talking, right? Because I didn't have that lens when I read it. I was just thinking about the mental health aspect for kids and kind of siloing that in my mind, right? But then, you know, those kids are then with each other at school, and we, you know, let's cut to the chase. Kids are not going to socially distance the way, you know, most adults I know are like, nah, about it, not great. So forget it. Kids aren't going to do that consistently. So it's going to be like a higher transmission, you know, environment. And then those kids go home or out into society. So it, you know, it's really good to have these conversations, because there are so many, I don't want to say competing, but like coexisting truths about this whole situation. So, you know, I have like moments where I think I've got it all figured out, and then something else comes in and I have no idea. So what I'm thinking in this moment is, you know, the recent announcement from the government, which was kind of touted as an announcement clarifying what's going to happen in September. I don't really think it gave us any new information. I think it, you know, for your listeners, it's basically, you know, it could be school as usual, blended learning of some kind. So maybe half the kids there, half working at home and switch in some way, or it could be fully online. And that's code for anything is possible, right? So we don't really know. And I think that that uncertainty, you know, there's a real hope for certainty right now. And I think that's the rub, because it's uncertain. Like, we just really don't know. And I think that's been really hard for the kids. The kids have asked me so many questions that are all different questions, but what they really mean is like, so what exactly is going to happen next? And it's been hard because I don't know. So I've been trying to, you know, model and interact with them about not knowing and making it okay not to know and okay to be stressed about that and to have your moments, you know? So I think this period of time has really highlighted all of the underlying inequalities and inequities that were already there. So, you know, how this virus has impacted me as a, you know, middle class, white, professional person is, you know, it's impacted me mostly at a feeling level, not at a physical level. So, and I'm not into, you know, a hierarchy of suffering. Like I've suffered it, for me, that's been quite profound and, you know, difficult. And I have a perspective as well. Like there's been food on the table. I'm not personally fearful about my health. It's just been very anxiety provoking and stressful. So, you know, it's impacted all of us differently, right? And then as groups differently. And I think that's translated to the kids too. So if I go down my list of kids that I've had less contact with, 100%, it's the kids who were already maybe at a heightened level of anxiety before. So the dividing line in our class isn't so much about socioeconomics that I can see, because there seems to be a minimum level of access that way. It's about mental health. That's been the dividing line. So the kids who haven't worked or haven't been able to interact about work have been the kids who just emotionally right now, I think it's like, I can relate, right? There are times when I sit down and I just think, you know, I can't do it. So I think there's some kids feeling that way long-term right now.
Absolutely. And what's interesting too, is I'm going to venture this guess, I'm just going to totally project, because this is exactly what happens to me. But, you know, the times where I found my kids less willing to participate, less willing to communicate, were the weeks where I myself was feeling intense, you know, either physical flares, issues or anxiety, like mental health issues, because I didn't know what changes were going to impact my disabilities. I had no idea if, like, I would be able to go somewhere or do something, and those mental health issues, you know, that just general level of stress really, really, you know, set the tone for the household.
Sure.
And again, I mean, our household is huge. We're huge advocates for mental health. We talk very openly. I firmly believe in, like, as I said before, giving the kids the vernacular to say, like, yeah, I am anxious, you know, yeah, or I need to take a mindful moment, or, you know, try and give them those tools. But I mean, hey, we're in a pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
So what's really funny is, I'll tell you this just as the parent rep of the class as well.
Right.
I actually have sent emails out to the class without you on them, right, and had zero response.
Right.
Now, I have had weeks later trickles of texts in from parents who, you know, finally get a moment to be able to connect and just say, yep, hey, you know, I'm not trying to ghost you or something, you know?
Right.
But that level of, you know, oh my gosh, all of a sudden parents are trying to work from home. All of a, yes, sudden parents, maybe they're, we even felt this, and we're pretty privileged in terms of having like more than one device.
Yeah.
So, you know, aside from the mental health stuff, just even access to participation, right? When everyone's vying for like that one device or two devices.
Mm-hmm.
not necessarily socioeconomical. You could kind of consider it that way, but even just like, I don't know anyone who, even if they were super privileged, had the wherewithal to like think in terms of supplies.
It's logistical. It's logistical. Even when you have the access, it's logistical or it's practical. I mean, this is one of the, you know, the great debate in society about synchronous learning, and meaning, you know, I don't even know what that means yet. And I'm an educator. I think it's been poorly defined, maybe on purpose, but you know, that was, I haven't met any teachers who were opposed to the concept. The difficulty with that is, I mean, and I have been doing a lot of synchronous learning as an educator. The difficulty is that, you know, my back bedroom does not lend itself to certain kinds of teaching. So, you know, a good example would be, you know, I really haven't done any math lessons. I've sourced that out. So I found, you know, things that are prepared for online consumption. I've found those, I've previewed them myself, and I've brought them in because I think they'd be more helpful than me kind of standing up in my bedroom, figuring out without materials and without, you know, anything I would need to teach a good lesson. But I think that, you know, there've been so many examples of that where, you know, we all want to do our best in this situation, I would say, but there are a lot of practicalities and logistics that have gotten in the way. And I would also say, you know, I don't have children of my own, and I'm like a very avid observer of people who do. And one of the things I saw in the beginning, I intuited, I guess, from amongst the parent community is wanting to normalize and support and provide continuity for their kids in this incredibly stressful and unusual time for kids. And for some families, I bet every family came to this at some point, there came kind of a point where it was too much, like trying to get the kid maybe to do all the work or trying to provide all of the kinds of instruction that the teacher would normally be on tap for, and trying to keep it all going while they're also either working from home or unemployed or taking care of someone else's kids because that person is an essential worker or whatever. So my conversations in the beginning, I really realized that teachers and the education system still hold a lot of power from the past, even though I don't feel like I try to act on that. And one of the superpowers I felt I needed to engage in the beginning was saying to people, you do not need to do all the work. Like, that was really impactful coming from me for many families, where I said, I don't think this is realistic. If we were at school, I would be not blanketing the whole class with the same expectation, you know? So we've got to do things differently. Take a step back. It's okay. Like, don't do it for me. Just do what makes sense. But I understood it. We're not just dealing with, you know, type A personality. It's wanting to give something to your child to make them feel secure and like everything's not falling apart. So, I really saw that from the parent community in the beginning. I think it was really hard.
We're just going to take a quick break to remind you to subscribe right now to Let It Land wherever you're listening so you don't miss an episode, and follow us on Instagram at Let It Land Podcast for guest bios, giveaways, and more. And also, remember, you can save $10 off your next Knixware purchase by using the special link in the notes and entering the code KnixPartner10 at checkout. Okay, let's get back to Christopher.
Basically, you know, my load changed completely. It got lighter in some ways, and it shifted to parents. And I think that was a really hard thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I know I even talked to you about that because mm-hmm. I know my husband and I, he comes from a family, he has two educators.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people, we all did this for the first while where we tried to become the teacher. And of course, it's like the worst acting exercise ever, you know? It's like, well, yeah, definitely showed me where like I still needed to do therapy.
teaching is good therapy because you have to work out every single kind of life dynamic, like by recess every day, right? So you have repeated practice of all that stuff.
Totally. And, you know, and also just like the way that I was taught by my dad and my mom were like the way that like my teaching experience, I mean, my learning experiences rather. So there's definitely that. And the one thing I did appreciate though, is that it kind of pinpointed achievement culture.
Right.
It said, you know, and that was the conversation you had with me where it was like, you know, you're doing enough. You are enough. You don't need to be like, and neither does Veronica. It's okay. And understanding that really helped. And I think a lot of parents need to hear that it's not about achievement right now. It's really not. So there's that. And then there's also somebody, a friend of mine who was, she's a professor and she's been at home obviously. And she said, you know, we need to remember that learning happens independent of school.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
And to trust that.
Yeah.
But you know, again, these things seem like so, they're like wonderful mantras, you know, like, okay, I don't need to achieve. I am enough. You know, learning happens independently of school. But when it comes down to it, we're looking at September and I know it's the end of June now. Oh my gosh. Mid-June. Sorry.
Feels like the end because we only have 1 week left of school, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that my vision is like already narrowing, like towards like, well, what do we do? Like, do I just keep on teaching them every day until September so that if things
I know. trying to and you're getting no real useful information from society in terms of what September is gonna look like, right? So it's so hard to make those decisions still. Because there isn't an endpoint or a specific milestone that we know about yet.
Well, I had to take some initiative and make decisions for myself, which was a really hard thing to do, especially because I'm active in the school community. I love school, but I honestly feel that we are gonna be one of the households that has to remain learning online.
Yeah, I was sorry. Just to jump in with that, when we were talking about what, I can't remember, but what came to my mind was that even if we go back to school and the ministry, you know, well, it's not going to be the ministry, it's going to be left to individual school boards at this point. So even if we do go back to school and the model is everybody just goes back to school and we have things in place for social distancing to whatever degree it's possible, we're still, as an equity piece or as an access piece, going to need to provide, in my opinion, the whole program so that it can be accessed at home too. Because it's, to me, a right of people to say, I know school's open and, you know, it's still a pandemic. So I think we're going to have a significant number of people who aren't going to want to access that. And if we look at that as an opportunity rather than as a bad thing, that might work for everybody. Because if we have a solid foundation built up through this experience of the last 3 months in terms of how to engage with kids online, and we can provide that, and then we also have kids at school who are able to do that, you know, it might just balance out, as these things often do, right? Like, you're going to have less kids in school, which is kind of what we need. And if kids can still, you know, get what they need at home or something like it, based on our experiences now, that might be ideal rather than committing to one thing and then, you know, this is your only option.
So this is exactly, as somebody who, you know, depends on accessible options, that's something that I just never, I will not, you know, understand. I just don't get it. I don't understand why even in this release, they didn't say first,
right?
Just to make sure that everybody, all high risk and, you know, people who are deciding to exercise the right not to send their kids to school because of risk, you know, of course we are, you know, strengthening our online curriculum right now. And that's what we're really solid. And then there will be other two options that we look at, as opposed to, well, there's the go back to traditional school, as per the guidelines, right?
Yeah.
Again, I had some issues with, But and then two, the mix and match, and then and you know, we'll still offer it, the online. And it's kind of like, it's not, that should be the focus. Like, right. When are we going to learn as a society, as a community, even to like, just if you actually lift up the people that, you know, need the lifting,
it benefits everybody.
Because yeah. Everyone can access it. It's universal.
That's a phrase we use in education all the time, right? Universal design for learning. So, you know, you don't have to design something specifically for that group of kids who's going to need help, because you designed it in the beginning to be accessible to everybody anyway. So, you know, that's just far superior, because then everybody feels like they're jumping into the learning, and everybody feels like their ways of being intelligent are valued, and their ways of doing things are valued. And we've never conceived of that before with the idea of, what if that universal design needs to go out of the school? Right? It needs to go out of the physical school now, and it needs to go into people's homes so that people can make really measured choices about, you know, what are the best options for them in school? Because I'll tell you right now, if, you know, I had mentioned before I got my mother into assisted living just prior to this, if that had not, sorry, it sounds bad when you say I got her into, my mother made a move to assisted living, just to make that clear, she was on board with that. But right, I didn't put her away. So, but you know, if that had not been the case, then on March 13th, I would have gone to get my mother from where she was living independently, and she would be with me. And I couldn't see myself going back to school at that point, because I can't afford to take that risk. So, you know, I think this is a situation that is going to be throughout society in September, whatever status COVID-19 is at that point. So we need to be thinking about that. I appreciate this conversation, because I'm thinking about it now in a different way, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting, because I realized I was spending a lot of time arguing, not arguing, actually, I don't like confrontation. Let's rephrase. I was spending a lot of time, you know, listening to and being exposed to conversations about mask wearing and schools, and it became political, and it became very angry very quickly. And yeah, I, as somebody who obviously is high risk, I have my own opinion about mask wearing. I think it's very important that we continue to physically distance and wear masks, which is another reason why I was shocked by the Sick Kids guidelines of, if there was school happening in, you know, traditional school setting, there'd be no masks.
Yeah.
What? But that's okay. That's all right. Hey, listen, we could all argue a heck of a lot less about the darn masks if we just focused on the universal education.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the critical thing, right?
No, because it would be exactly as you said, you know, if we had that coming out of the school, then, you know, people who were able to access things physically, personally, you know, yeah, they could make their own informed decision about that. Or yeah, maybe it would be six people in a class. And who knows, like, as you said, these things have a way of working themselves out. So
if we, you know, one of the things that can be challenging is that there's a rigidity in our profession, and, you know, we're a unionized profession, and there are many pros to that. So I don't want this to come across as I'm anti-union. It's more like I don't adopt positions very often. It's more, I just try to look at the whole picture. So one of the challenges of that mentality that we have in education is it can be very fixed around, you know, I'm the French teacher, I'm the educational assistant, I teach grade 5-6. And I think in this particular situation, I think we've got the human resources to make something work really well, where we could reduce the numbers of kids in each particular place in the school, because we're not going to be using, you know, certain areas of the school anyway, so we can redeploy kids to those places so we can spread them out. So we could minimize some of the risks within the school if we had a professional culture where people are willing to be more flexible, or a union is willing to say, yeah, I think this is totally fair during a pandemic. We're going to play ball. We're going to do all these things. And the only guarantee we want is when the pandemic's over, we go back to, you know, looking, you know, we revisit this so that we're not saying in perpetuity, all of these things are now new rules, because that's maybe not a good way to make decisions either. But let's have some faith, right? Let's work together. And similarly, you know, it's going to be a workload thing where if, for me personally, if I'm in class all day and then I have a virtual class running at the same time, there's going to be a workload thing there. It's going to be more. And it's a pandemic. And I think for me personally, you've got to find ways to work more or work differently in those situations. And I just hope that there's the presence of mind at that point to access the resources that we have and to not sort of stand on principle or stand on dogma to stop things from happening. Because even throughout this process, there have been times like where I feel like the example I gave of, you know, don't engage with kids' feelings too much. Or, you know, the another one that has been huge in our professional kind of scare tactics that we get is the Google Meets. That's our platform of choice at our school. You know, leave teachers exposed to invasions of privacy or inappropriate things happening. And Kat, I'm just letting you know right now, if my partner happens to walk by in his boxer shorts during a Google Meet, I feel like I have the social skills to bring to bear to talk my way out of that, because we're doing something really important, right? We're educating kids. So if he has a moment, which we've come close many times, that's because I'm working from home. Like, I just think that's the goodwill piece. Like, I'm not, if he walks by in his boxer shorts in room 24 at the school, I feel like you can catch me on that. But right, if he walks by in his home, in the kitchen, and I'm teaching from home, I kind of think we can let that stuff go, you know?
Absolutely.
So we have to keep our heads about us, I think, and just try to focus on doing the right things and doing good things. And all those little details, we'll just say, oh, I'm sorry about that. He should have been wearing pants. I'll let him know for next time.
You know, what's really interesting is that I think that a lot of people are that vulnerability, again, as I said in the beginning, just that ability to like talk about feelings, to lead those conversations is a huge, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I think it's, and again, like, yeah, I can't imagine like what it would, well, I can actually, because I've had, even in the last podcast I did, you know, Heath and I were talking about his COVID testing and like, we were like, seriously, like there's like a really tense emotional moment. And then all of a sudden the kids will come in because we're both trying to host this podcast. Usually there's like one person on, one person off.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, and we kept it in, we kept it in the podcast because it's just too funny. You hear like someone being like, I don't know how to draw. And it's life.
And that can be a good connection for people, right? It's like, I see these things as positives when, yeah, those are our working conditions and our living conditions right now. Like, I wasn't, you know, I didn't set this up to be a classroom. It just became that. So,
well, and again, like what's interesting now, because we're in this time of really challenging kind of systemic infrastructure. Like, right. Why does the classroom have to look that way?
Why do people have to wear pants?
Exactly. Pants are so overrated.
No, but yeah. So sorry to your, that was a good point you were making. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh no, it's quite interesting that like, you know, we're at this time of just questioning like, well, who does that serve or why do we need that? Or, you know, like there have been, I'm not going to lie, there have been a couple times where coming up to visit the classroom at school building my daughter is in, your class, there's three flights of stairs.
Yep.
There's no, you know, and while you and all the staff have remained incredibly accessible to moving things to a different area.
Yeah.
Part of my heart kind of goes, yeah, but.
Shouldn't have to.
I shouldn't have, exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
So there's that, and there's just the design of our learning experience. That's just what it is. And as parents and as teachers and as students. So yes, absolutely. I think a window into the lives of the people who are making huge changes in our kids' lives is beautiful. I think 100%. I think it's important. I think it is.
I think it's the foundation of mental health to be one's whole self, right? Like I think one of the reasons kids, I don't know if there's greater incidence of anxiety or not, but you know, in my perception, there either is, or kids are more fluent in talking about it. But I think one of our societal, and I'm talking about like people from my background, the sort of dominant, you know, your English background group, it's this bisection of there's like your public persona, and then there's kind of who you are, and your professional persona, and then there's who you are, and those things don't cross over. And so, you know, one of those fundamental messages for kids is bring your whole self to school. That's what I've talked about before. But I think it's also, you know, the adults who they are around need to do that too, so that it's no big deal if, you know, I'm the type of person that tears are fairly accessible to me at any given moment. And, you know, that's something that I've let the kids see, because when we feel, sometimes we cry, right? And so, but I also feel that tension. Like, I know a lot of people would think that that's totally inappropriate. And so, you know, I make those choices kind of because I can't help it, but also consciously. I think those sorts of things are really important for kids to keep that idea that we're whole people with the whole spectrum of feelings. And, you know, you can't cut yourself into pieces and just show what's presentable in particular places and what's acceptable to particular people.
I think that that is so true. It is so, so true. And in fact, I mean, isn't that what acceptance is? Isn't that what community is truly built on, where it's, you know, if we're not being ourselves, then what is the community?
Right, right. Who are we relating to?
What I'm going to do is let's focus on some takeaways now, because as we know, you know, I could talk to you forever, by the way, but I as we know, you know, September, regardless of the politic, regardless of, you know, the different camps and the beliefs and what might or might not happen, we are, as you said, still navigating that unknown and that uncertainty.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the only consistent thing right now, right?
Yeah.
So as an educator, as somebody who is, you know, in an incredibly creative and adaptive space, by the way, I really have to thank you again for that.
Oh, thank you so much.
What words of advice might you have for kids and parents?
I think mental health is going to have to be at the fore, as it always should be, but particularly again in September, when we deal with whatever that's going to look like. There's going to be disappointment, there's going to be joy, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff going on for everybody about how that looks. And I think we have to be prepared to be really nimble in our approach to helping kids stay mentally well and feel well. And I'll give some examples. Like, so in the beginning of the pandemic, we talked a lot about, it's all about mental health. And I think that we maybe misinterpreted that as kind of a blanket, which was for the kids, just do what you can in terms of this work, in terms of the work that we were assigning and so on. So we were really pumping out that message. As I said before, it maybe didn't resonate in a lot of places because everybody was feeling different things. But a more nuanced view of mental health is like, we're going to have to know each other really well. The kids are going to, the teachers, the parents, the kids, we're all going to have to talk a lot, because for one kid to feel mentally well, to feel good, that kid might need me to say, all right, business as usual. Friday at 3:30, I want this. You know, you didn't hand that in. What's going on? Do you need some help? Like the kind of normal feeling works for some kids. That's what they want. They want, okay, he's acting like everything's okay, so everything must be okay. The student right beside them could need something totally different, could need a kind of, you know, let's you and I talk about how can we set up a schedule that's going to work for you? And, you know, what's that going to look like? And like, to your point about in school, at home, are there other places kids can work that aren't in school or at home, right? So that families can still work, kids can still be in some place for school, but it's not the school. So I think the biggest thing for September that we've all been called upon so much, and we're probably right out of it, is going to be flexibility, you know, nimble thinking, being easy with ourselves as far as, you know, not really knowing how to go about things, but having good intentions and not being afraid to make mistakes, and, you know, move forward, move back, change things around. I think that's going to be number one. And if I were communicating directly with parents, even in our community, where I feel like there's a pretty strong connection between the teachers and the families, I really learned a lot about the weight school carries for the parents. So for the families. So in a conversation with one family about, you know, the kind of crushing expectation that the kid was experiencing from all the work in the beginning, the parent said to me, you know, what you might want to do is maybe send an email that says, you know, you don't have to do all of this work and there can be a flexible schedule and so on. And I said, and I totally get why the parent didn't receive this message, but that was absolutely kind of the header in all the communication. And it taught me that I need to do more in terms of connecting with people personally to make sure that that message is heard, because the specter of school is so strong for people that message of, you know, parents, you're in charge, just washed over a lot of people, you know? And I think, so that's something we as educators have to keep in mind in the fall, that we're going to have to do more in terms of really talking with people to see what's going to work for their kids. There's a million things we could talk about, but that's what's on my mind right now.
I think that is 100%, you know, that answers a lot of my questions too, you know. And there's, again, I think that it's really interesting because, as you were just saying before, like staying open, staying flexible, you know, be ready to roll with it. Again, yeah. Those things, it comes right back to the growth mindset.
Yeah, that's the theme.
Exactly. It really is, where I think the more we can do as a community, as parents, as teachers, as kids,
yeah,
and just, you know, staying open, staying healthy, and
yeah,
also respecting each other's like personal kind of health and our decisions, and just experiencing as we need to.
Yeah.
That growth and learning process, it's a really powerful message. And I really hope that a lot of our listeners feel some kind of hope and kind of take away some of, I know whenever you and I have meetings, especially with Veronica, she always says, Mr. Snow is so soothing.
She said, that's so nice. I'm glad to hear that. You know, I want to be soothing. That's good. Because
yeah,
I, you know, inside a teacher's head is a lot of, you feel, I sometimes, oh, am I tyrannical? Am I, you know, I'm like, I don't know how I come across. Even after all these years, I think I'm kindly Mr. Snow, but there are times when I think, am I crotchety Mr. Snow? And I just don't know it.
Well, you are soothing Mr. Snow. And I really, really appreciate all the time and this conversation. I'd love to come back to this in a few months with you and see
how. I thank you for this time too. You know, the process of just having the conversation and talking about it, really, I would come out of something like this and be thinking about it for hours, right? Or for days, like reflecting on things we talked about. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate seeing, you know, another example of how it's going from a family's perspective that's been sorely lacking in this process. So I do really appreciate it, and the good work you're doing with the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. That makes me
you're
really
welcome.
Happy. Yay. Thank you so much, Christopher Snow.
Oh,
and
you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
It was lovely talking. I'll check in with you in a few months for sure.
All right. Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I loved hearing Christopher's very grounded voice give so much great advice about just dealing with uncertainty and making sure mental health is first and foremost, whether you're a teacher, a student, or a parent during this very strange time that we're navigating through. And I know his words will also be resonating very deeply because our family is starting our virtual learning next week. If you do have questions for Christopher, please feel free to reach out to us at Let It Land Podcast on Instagram. Make sure you're following us there and give me a DM and we will start a conversation or some kind of discussion that way. Also, just a reminder that you can use that special link in the notes to get $10 off your purchase of Knixware. All you have to do is, again, use my link and enter KnixPartner10 at checkout. Until next time, keep listening. I'm your host, Kat Inakai, letting it land.